Welcome back.
This is Sam.
And this is Corrine, and we are two Octops.
This week's episode, we're going to be focusing on primary CNS lymphoma. We're going to go over all the important details of the epidemiology of this disease, the diagnosis, staging, and of course, the treatment of this rare and aggressive lymphoma. A special thank you to my former co-fellow and one of the smartest women I know, Dr. Ayushi Chauhan, who is a lymphoma expert and who helped review this outline for us.
Yes, thank you so much, Ayushi. And so to start us off, can you tell us some of the epidemiology associated with primary CNS lymphoma?
So primary CNS lymphoma is an aggressive rare diagnosis, which I just talked about, and this is a non-Hodgkin's lymphoma that can involve the brain, leptomeninges, eyes, and spinal cord. The pathology is most commonly diffuse large B-cell lymphoma. This is predominantly a disease of immunocompetent elderly. Incidence in patients who are over the age of 70 years old is 10 times higher than the general population. If associated, though, with an immunocompromised state, such as HIV or transplant, the age of diagnosis is usually younger, around the age of 30. Primary CNS lymphoma can also occur as post-transplant lymphoproliferative disorders and associated with a poor prognosis. So be aware of this in our solid organ transplant as well as stem cell transplant patients. And 70% of cases will have mutations in MYD88 and CD79B.
Yes, for fellows, you might remember this from HemPath. And so what are the signs and symptoms of primary CNS lymphoma?
So these can include vague things like headaches, as well as visual changes, seizures, focal neurologic changes, elevated intracranial pressure, and mental status changes. About 30% of patients will have cognitive impairment as an early symptom of primary CNS lymphoma, which can be mistaken for dementia because, again, this is the elderly population.
Absolutely. And so how do we make the diagnosis of CNS lymphoma?
So for primary CNS lymphoma, we look at the MRI with and without gadolinium, and this is the imaging of choice to make the diagnosis. It will show a solitary or multiple homogeneously enhancing lesions that are dark on diffusion, weighted imaging. So this means they don't have many vessels and there's really no water. So T2 is dark. There's usually minimal vasogenic edema, which is different than other CNS mets or CNS primary tumors like gliomas. Locations more common for primary CNS lymphoma include the periventricular white matter, the subcortical and cortical locations, the leptomeninges, and the vitreous area of the eye. When the MRI is suggestive of primary CNS lymphoma, consider getting CSF cytology and flow, as well as considering a stereotactic biopsy. But this is one of the only lymphomas where the diagnosis can be made radiographically without a biopsy, specifically in cases where the biopsy may be too difficult due to the deep location of the tumor. Resection of these is generally not recommended, so not surgery. You need to be aware that steroids can cause disappearance or significant decrease in the lesion on MRI, as well as interfere with biopsy results. So our goal is always to try to get the diagnosis first, then start steroids if primary CNS lymphoma is suspected.
Yes, absolutely. Biopsy, then steroids. For most lymphomas, that's usually the case if suspected. And so what is the staging workup for primary CNS lymphoma?
So our staging is going to include a total spine MRI. If able, we want to do an LP and avoid contrast artifacts. So do the LP before the total spine MRI when we're able to. The LP, we're looking at the CSF if this is safe. We need to call our colleagues in ophthalmology for an exam and a slit lamp exam because 25% will have ocular involvement, which will require intraocular radiation therapy. We're also going to look everywhere else. So CT, chest, abdomen, pelvis, or a full body PET scan to make sure there's no extra CNS involvement. We're going to be looking at HIV testing. We're going to test LDH, and we're going to do a testicular exam and ultrasound in males. Possibly we do a bone marrow biopsy, but not in all cases.
And do we have prognostic factors for primary CNS lymphoma?
We do. So negative prognostic factors include being over the age of 60 at time of diagnosis, which is majority of our patients, having an ECOG performance status greater than 1, having an elevated LDH, elevated CSF protein, involvement of the deep brain regions, and being immunocompromised state leading to this diagnosis.
And so let's jump into treatment. What are some general treatment facts that we need to know about primary CNS lymphoma?
So in general, we need to be aware that steroids, we do that after diagnosis when able. As we just mentioned, primary CNS lymphoma is very responsive to steroids and can lead to vanishing tumors on imaging and distorting the pathology on biopsy. Steroids rapidly alleviate the primary CNS lymphoma signs and symptoms. The next thing we need to be aware of is methotrexate. This is the most effective agent against primary CNS lymphoma, and we need to have high dose methotrexate. So that means greater than or equal to 3.5 grams per meter squared. This level is needed to penetrate the blood-brain barrier and achieve therapeutic levels within the CSF. Because we're giving such high-dose methotrexate, we also need to be giving supportive leucovorin to reduce the toxicity of methotrexate. The mechanism of this is methotrexate is our folate antagonist that works by inhibiting the dihydrate folate reductase enzyme in the cell, and leucovorin is a folate derivative that does not need to undergo reduction by the enzyme dihydrofolate reductase for utilization in DNA synthesis. So thus, it rescues the normal cells in the body from the methotrexate toxicity. Intrathecal methotrexate can be used in select cases, though not majority. And we think about this if the CSF cytology yields positive findings and the patient is not otherwise able to tolerate high-dose methotrexate. One other thing we need to be aware of for methotrexate is that renal dysfunction from high-dose methotrexate is potentially life-threatening. And the treatment or the reversal is glucarpidase, which rapidly reduces the plasma concentration of methotrexate, preventing severe toxicity. Commonly, we use combination of high-dose methotrexate with other chemo agents, and that can include procarbazine, vincristine, cytarabine, rituximab, and temozolomide. If using rituximab, just like other lymphomas, we need to be testing for hepatitis B because of the risk of reactivation, and that testing includes hepatitis B surface antigen and core antibody.
And so, Sam, what are options for induction therapy?
So our options for induction therapy, clinical trials is always the right answer when we're talking about rare and aggressive diseases, including primary CNS lymphoma. Of course, high-dose methotrexate-based regimens, like we briefly just touched on, will be the answer on test day. This may be something like high-dose methotrexate 8 grams per meter squared with rituximab, with or without Temodar, or high-dose methotrexate dosed at 3.5 grams per meter squared combined with vincristine, procarbazine, and rituximab, and this is called RMVP.
Absolutely. I think it's really important to know the high-dose methotrexate with rituximab. We definitely had a question on that initial induction therapy for CNS lymphoma, and it's also important to know the clearance parameters for methotrexate. So if you're ever on a bone marrow transplant rotation, you'll be familiar with this. And depending on where you practice, the methotrexate goal at 48 hours is generally under 0.4. And depending on where you practice, the parameter for discharge may be 0.1 or 0.05 micromoles per liter. And so what are the best options for consolidation therapy?
So best consolidation therapy, the answer on test day will most likely be myeloablative chemotherapy followed by auto stem cell transplant. At ASH a few years ago, data was presented from the European group showing that auto stem cell transplant has improved survival over non-myeloablative chemotherapy. There is some head-to-head data also for auto having better neurocognitive outcomes compared to whole brain radiation. So I think this is the preference. But per the NCCN guidelines, other listed or all listed options include, if complete response after induction therapy, you can consider high-dose systemic chemo with that auto stem cell rescue, which we just talked about, high-dose cytarabine with or without etoposide, low-dose whole brain radiation, which we need to be aware of the neurocognitive effects that it can have, Temodar after whole brain radiation, continuous high-dose methotrexate with rituximab for up to a year. If residual disease is seen after induction therapy, options include high-dose cytarabine with and without etoposide, whole brain radiation, Temodar following that whole brain radiation, and also best supportive care.
Absolutely. And so what if the patient cannot undergo systemic induction therapy?
The patient is not systemic therapy eligible. We do rely on more local therapies. And so that can be whole brain radiation. We also think about radiation to the globe if there is vitreoretinal involvement, and radiation to the spine if lesions are seen in the MRI.
Exactly. Yeah. Some patients for decreased renal function, for example, if their creatinine clearance is under 30 or if they have a very poor performance status, may just be considered for radiation only. And so what is the treatment for recurrent or relapsed primary CNS lymphoma?
So it goes down to timing, as we have with other malignancies. If the recurrence occurs later than 1 year from the initial treatment, you can repeat that high-dose methotrexate regimen that they had with their first induction therapy. If recurrence occurs within 1 year of initial treatment, we're considering other options. So things that we've already talked about, whole brain radiation, clinical trials, but also ibrutinib, and then we also talk about the Temodar with or without rituximab. Best supportive care is also always an option, especially for those patients who have a poor performance status.
Absolutely. So that was a really great summary. And so what are our key takeaways?
Our key takeaways for primary CNS lymphoma is to be aware that this is an aggressive non-Hodgkin's lymphoma. Most commonly, it's diffuse large B-cell lymphoma, and it's involving the brain, the leptomeninges, the eyes, or the spinal cord. Risk factors, age. So again, this is really a disease of the elderly when you're immunocompetent, but also we need to be aware of the risk factors of being in immunocompromised state, such as HIV or post-transplant, both solid or stem cell transplants. Diagnosis, that MRI, biopsy, sometimes if it's needed, we do CSF analysis as well. And remember to get the diagnosis prior to starting steroids if able, because steroids can wipe this away on imaging as well as CSF. Treatment includes steroids to alleviate symptoms after we get the diagnosis and high-dose methotrexate. So the levels have to be greater than or equal to 3.5 grams per meter squared to penetrate that blood-brain barrier and get effective therapeutic levels in the CSF. Because we're giving such a high dose, you got to give that rescue leucovorin, and we need to be cognizant of renal dysfunction. And again, that reversal is glucarpidase, which rapidly reduces the plasma concentrate of methotrexate, preventing that severe toxicity.
Definitely. And also remember the methotrexate clearance goal, because that can come up. And clinically, practically, comes up all the time. And so as always, thank you for listening and good luck with boards. Please feel free to reach out to us with corrections or comments on our Instagram or Twitter @OncDocs.